Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics. Let's discuss how to create and improve your reliability program and your career. Welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Fred Schenkelberg, and I got Kirk Gray on the line. Hey, Kirk.
Hey, Fred. Good to talk to you again.
Yeah, you were just telling me offline that you had troubleshot your air conditioner system, and you're in kind of I think you're in Fort Collins or Denver area?
Outside of Boulder in Lafayette, Colorado.
Okay. So it gets hot there.
It does. Actually does that. And not nearly as well where we were in Texas, but
yeah,
that's kind of why we moved up here.
All right. So your air conditioner failed. You know, it's a home appliance kind of thing. And it's, you know, probably, well, how long do you expect, being from Texas, did you ever have to replace your air conditioner system?
No, in Texas we never did.
And how long did you use the system, or how old were they?
We were at the house about 12 years. So okay. Never had a failure of our,
Well, they build them bigger in Texas, so they last longer.
Yeah, certainly you have to, that's another factor. You do have to address the environment you're going to be in. And for Texas or Arizona, you certainly have to make different considerations than you would in Minnesota.
All right. So in your troubleshooting of your air conditioner recently, roughly how many parts? I've never taken apart an air conditioner. I know like a window unit is heavy. I know there's something in there that's pretty darn heavy, but there's air motion. There's a coolant usually. There's electronics. There's fans. There's moving parts. There's
right.
It obviously gets heating and cooling because it's right. The system's pretty dynamic. Roughly how many parts are in this thing?
Gosh, you know, about looking at the circuit board, if you just looked at components and count them individually, that's about 30 or 40.
So it's not a cell phone then.
Yeah, it's not a cell phone, but it, you know, heavily mechanical, of course. And that's, you know, another 15 to 20 parts, something like that. So, you know, roughly 50, 60 parts, something like that would probably be,
okay.
You know.
So in your troubleshooting, you mentioned that you had a blower basically wasn't coming on.
Right,
To distribute the cold air in the home.
Right.
Well, the motor itself, right? The blower motor was probably where you started. That's where I'd start, right?
Right. And make sure that would come on. I mean, that came on.
That it, if it had power, it would turn, right?
Well, that was the challenge.
It
seemed to come on intermittently.
Right. But let's say if you looked at just that motor, it's an electric motor, right?
Right.
It's got dozens, if not hundreds of parts in it.
Yes.
And it could be jammed. It could be, you know, the fan could be bound. It could be some foreign object in it. It could have a loose wire. It could be the rotor has got a short in it, so it doesn't go. Right. The list goes on and on and on, right? You've been in, you know, hazard analysis or FMEAs where you basically list dozens, if not hundreds of ways something can fail.
Right. The windings could get shorted, insulation. Yeah. There's just dozens of ways.
I would submit that in a home air conditioning system, there's at least 1,000 ways they can fail. At least.
Maybe so.
Right?
I hope I don't find out.
That's right. All that matters really is the one that does fail, and then we go fix that. But as a design side, right, we're often in that case of, well, I want to put together an air conditioner system, and I don't want it to fail. I want it to last 15 years or 30 years or however long, because the customers expect it to last that long. They'd really get upset if they had to replace their, you know, the main compressor every 5 years.
That's right.
It would be not very cost effective at that point.
That's right. Customer expectations are really what rule.
Right. So if you're in the design side and you're making a device, say you're buying a motor for this system. You know, and most organizations don't make their own motors, or they don't make every component that goes into the system. They're aggregating that and putting it into a system. So let's say you're working with the procurement folks and your design engineer, and you want to pick a motor.
Right.
You're going to talk, they're going to talk about what kind of current and voltage it has, what kind of control circuitry it has, what kind of capacity it has, what kind of, you know, air movement capability it has, all these different things that go into sizing the motor for the, your particular system. As a reliability engineer, we're going to come in and say, well, if it doesn't do all of those things, it fails.
Right.
And if it shorts out, or it gets debris in it, or it does this, 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 you know, dozen more things, it fails.
Right.
Well, how do you, so part of this is we want that motor to last, say, the 15 years.
Right.
And here's the conditions and all this stuff. So what do we add to that discussion back to the vendor that says, hey, we want a motor that does this amount of motion and torque and all these other capabilities on a, you know, 20 amp circuit, blah, blah, blah. What's the reliability piece such that you get a motor that meets the requirements?
Well, obviously the bearings, I mean, things that, especially in a mechanical system like a motor, you are going to have physical material wear, whether it be the bearings, if it's got a brush, if it's not, if it's got contactor brushes, it,
right?
Those,
yeah.
So those
there's
are
wear. There's all these ways it can fail, but how do you how do you tell the vendor, I don't want it to fail, in a way that they can deliver it, right?
Well, they're you know, that's right. Say we should have zero failures in the first 5 years, and maybe we can expect some of the wear out mechanisms in the worst use environments or the worst case use environments like Arizona will have, you know, that 5 year life or and there'll be a starting there and continue up. I have not seen a clear method to have a vendor tell a vendor, we don't want failures in the first 5 years. What are you going to do to keep from the product failing in the first year, component or whatever?
Well, what if they came back to you and said, we will replace it every 6 months and you have to pay for that? So you, instead of buying one motor, you have to buy 20 motors and the technician to go replace it.
Yeah.
I mean, and the price goes up and the inconvenience to your customer goes up. So they could meet that specification of no failures in 15 years if you replace it every 6 or 8 months.
Right, but that's unreasonable.
Why?
And that would, well, because that is a significant cost, and it's known, it's pretty much established that electric motors can run many, many years. That's well known by the most consumers. So it would be unacceptable from what we talked about at the beginning, consumer expectations.
Well, we can't say have no failures whatsoever. And even running a motor for 6 months, the likelihood of it getting damaged at installation or having a latent defect from assembly or or getting struck by lightning, there's still a chance that it's going to fail in 6 months. So I don't think it's reasonable to say, hey, I don't want any failures.
Well, no, it's not reasonable, but those are assignable causes that, you know.
No, we're buying it. It's going into systems, and it's a new system. We don't have a field out on it. And the motor is custom because we want to make this really quiet air-moving system or whatever.
Right.
And so you put this system together. You create a design, and you're looking for the motor piece, and you talk to suppliers. So I think we've kind of bounded this kind of roughly is that one is we don't – we're not okay with saying, just give us a motor, it'll be fine, whatever.
No.
Right.
you want to give we give us a motor and tell us why these mechanisms that we know already will not be an issue in the 5 years of use, in this number of hours of use. And if there is a mechanism that you know will cause eventual failure of the device, tell us about it. Tell us what your model is and how you derive that model. And tell us what your distribution of that model is, so that we can expect a certain, you know, distribution of that particular mechanism, which is normal. Mm-hmm, but mm-hmm. we can't expect any product to survive a direct lightning strike. And
lightning and, rods do.
But they still have, you know, a limitation. But I always wonder, you know, there's always, you've just pointed out, manufacturing variations. A process that's not capable causing a failure over time. Show us how you control your processes. I mean, you could go back to the vendor and ask him all of his quality or reliability verification processes. And hopefully they would provide you with that. You know, that's great. Then you'd have some real fundamental data to go and say, we know this product's not going to fail if it's used in this environment with these conditions for this period of time, and it's manufactured, each one of them is manufactured identical to the other motors. Okay.
Which
and the
isn't
ones we're
happen
testing.
Either, yeah.
Which is not going to happen either. So those are all variables that we have to, you know, obviously SPC, we control the variation in manufacturing if it's used properly. And then but the problem is when there's an excursion, you know, euphemism, excursion in the manufacturing process.
Something goes wrong.
Very costly excursions. And it's found out many years, you know, years or months later. It's that's where, you know, the idea of HASS or empirical stress testing for verification that you haven't latent defects in there, that defects won't appear over time, a particular weakness in the product, that's the only real protection I see you can do. Other than, you know, you can measure parts, like I said, that's SPC, and make sure your manufacturing process is capable. But you can't protect against every in case of, you know, your basement flooding. You can't expect your motor to be okay after you empty your basement and try and start up the air conditioning. That's where my air conditioning unit is, or my blower is down in the basement. So there would be, you know, extreme cases where we would all agree that it can't survive. It's just like our phone.
Well, there's
our phones.
No. Let's back up a little bit. There are.
Okay.
I think there is. In the vendor design team and supplier mm-hmm. relationship, there is an understanding that they're trying to match the products such that it meets the expectations of the end system's customer.
Right.
Right. And so in some organizations, they'll break down what their system goal is. They're saying, hey, we want this air conditioning system to last for 15 years, and this motor is a part of that. So the duration's 15 years, but we need it to – in order for the overall system to survive, we're going to budget or allocate some probability of failure to the motor system. So it might be your motor system has to be 99% reliable for 15 years in this environment, in providing this kind of whatever a motor does, you know, mm-hmm. for this circumstance. So we can give them a number. We can mm-hmm. say, here's the expect, you know, if you have more failures than this, then it's bad. And if you have less failures than this, it's good. So right. we can quantify that. But I really right. like what you first started answering this question was, is how will it fail?
Right.
Right. And are any of these failures going to cause problems over the 15-year term?
Right.
Right. Right. And above some, say, threshold. So let's say we budgeted it to have a 1% failure rate over 15 years. Mm-hmm. Well, any of the things that you see, including manufacturing variability, mm-hmm. Take it over that minute, that threshold. And you might even set, you know, within the first year, like there's probably a builder's warranty or something that says, you know, 1 year of installation, it's guaranteed. And so there might be a different target for that, and 15 years for the homeowner and so on.
Right.
But what you were describing is very similar to what the British military the Ministry of Defense has a standard called reliability case. And it's basically saying, hey, we want a system that meets this reliability specification, failure rate or probability or whatever. But how do you know it will meet that? What's your burden of proof? Is your data, your evidence, your criteria, your scientific understanding.
Right.
How does that help us to understand, one, that you understand the product, and how is it then apply into this circumstance, right? And so if they have a bunch of physics of failure models for the top five dominant failure mechanisms, that's a whole lot different than them saying, well, we've shipped 4 million units and we've never heard of any problems ever. Like, okay, that's not a very strong case.
Not that our fault. Not that our,
yeah, we none of them were our fault.
Yeah, it was misuse by the customer. It was abuse.
Yeah, they turned it on.
Yeah.
They're not supposed to do that.
And you know, going back to my air conditioning system, I during my troubleshooting, I mean, little things I found were just wouldn't be recommended by the manufacturer. And that was that I opened it up and found that the filter probably hadn't been changed in 5 years. And it was almost a solid wall.
Yeah,
it was,
yeah.
And that created a huge load for the blower motor to, plus it didn't make the system very efficient, but it changed certainly the load and the conditions that the blower motor was having to issue.
Oh,
and
definitely.
that was up to the consumer to change that filter out.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of those variables have to be assumed when you make those models, but all the vendor can do for that motor is give you all his specifications. He doesn't have the opportunity usually. Sometimes he does. It depends on the design and what you're building, but to see the application and to deal with you in the application. It's a small component like a resistor. He's never going to see the application, you know.
If you're making resistors, you probably have a dozen or more of them within arm's reach at any given time.
Right.
You know, your phone, your computer, your car, your resistor is in those things, you know, or very, very similar ones.
Right.
So, I think our suppliers have the same problem that we have as a system designer, design team, or product team, is we don't know exactly how our customer is going to use the product, right?
Exactly.
And in a lot of cases, their customer doesn't actually tell us what they want from a reliability point of view. If you ask anybody shopping for a washer and dryer or an air conditioner system, you would say, well, what's your reliability requirements?
Always works.
Well, I remember one guy, I actually asked people, I was at Best Buy and asking people what they're thinking about reliability for computers. He says, well, I understand that not all computers will last 5 years, but I want the one that I buy to last 5 years without failure.
Mm-hmm.
He says, so if I told him I was a reliability engineer, and he said, well, can you help me find the computer, you know, if there's 10 boxes here, which box out of, you know, if it has a 10% failure rate, which box is going to have a failure and which nine are not? And I want to buy one of the good ones.
Yeah. Did you get your divining stick or whatever?
Oh, no, I pulled out some dice and we rolled dice. And
that's about as good. It's like a reliability prediction.
If I could tell you, you know, we wouldn't have the bad one sitting here, but
we pick out that one and ship it back to the factory, you know.
But he did tell me he wants it to work for 5 years, and he knew his environment. So I asked him more questions about how he used it and where he used it. So I gathered a bunch of good information. But his personal expectation is I don't want any failures. And then we never did get to an understanding of what was an economically reasonable failure. So if it failed, and Dell used to be really famous for if their customer satisfaction that would go up if the product failed. Because their customer support, and this is way back, was so good that people felt so taken care of that there was that if they had a failure, they were better customers. They liked the product better, as opposed to HP and Compaq and the others that were basically, you're on your own, dude. Send us money.
Right. Well, that was one advantage that Dell had early was the direct marketing that they did. Contacted Dell, you didn't contact CompUSA or you didn't go through a store. So they knew directly, you know, they satisfied the customer directly by talking to Dell.
Right. But that, the notion though is that our suppliers are in the same boat, right? They're making a resistor or a motor and it gets used in many different applications.
Exactly.
And so when we walk in the door, we're going to say, I want a motor that does this, this, and this and is reliable. And Sam from down the street, he's designing a system and he wants a motor that does this, this, and this, but a, he says reliability a different way. And, you know, so suppliers are in exactly the same situation product development teams are, is this vagueness of what the customer is. So I'm suggesting that we include in the reliability requirement those questions that you brought up is... Here's the circumstance. Here's the desired envelope in environment and use conditions and how we plan on using this, say, motor. What could go wrong?
You know, what do you know about this?
What do you know about it? Yeah. Right. And what's the chance it'll last 15 years?
And show me your, you know, if you can. And this is always a real challenge for a company to show you their test data because they might show you where things failed and they don't want to do that. That's not in their interest to show you that they had any failures.
I always tell them I'd much rather see the failures and how you learn from that rather than you ignore all failures and show me nothing but success.
Right. They say, great, Fred, but we're not going to do that.
I've won a few of those.
One or two would be willing to do that and understand that you're a reasonable person and you realize it's not going to be that. And also, maybe they've corrected whatever they found, okay? I mean, that would be even greater that they said, okay, we found that this was a weak link. This bearing didn't quite hold up to our life expectancy, so we upgraded to a harder material or something
different
like
or
that.
A process control issue solved it and stuff. But if they say, oh, we never have failures, you shouldn't have a problem. it's not a strong an argument to do it. But I think it goes beyond just saying, hey, I want a reliable system. I don't want any failures.
Right.
And it's, I think you're on to something with just ask the right questions. So let's wrap it up there. You know, as you're working with vendors, it's the same as us working with our customers of trying to understand what's an acceptable amount of risk that the product will fail over some duration. And there's so many moving parts that that is difficult. So understanding the physics and chemistry and understanding process control are all part of that process.
There's so many moving parts and there's also so many tiers of manufacturing.
Oh, yeah, definitely. So it's, if you've got a great system or a way that you specify reliability to your suppliers, let us know. Kirk and I would love to hear about it. You can find the episode under the Speaking of Reliability podcast series at reliability.fm and leave us a comment. Send us a note saying, you know, here's what works or doesn't work and what challenges do you face? We'd love to hear how you solve this. So with that, Kirk, let's wrap this one up.
Okay, Fred, it's good to talk to you again, and let's get together again soon.
All right, great. Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation if you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show. Please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.